Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
We're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is...
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it?
Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
Oh, that's beautiful. That transported me into a world.
I know. I'm ready to go now.
Me too. Welcome to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. On today's show, why does it feel so good to sing with others? Dr. Asal Habibi tells us about the benefits of going choral. And driving instructor Josh Mendoza answers Paula's questions about rules of the road. If your turn light is out and your window is broken, is it okay to open your door and shout, "I'm turning left"? I'm Adam Felber, your discussion traffic cop. And now please welcome the woman who double parks in a single space, Paula Poundstone. Yeah. Welcome, Paula, and thank you to tonight's house band, bassoonist Amber Wyman. All right. It's great to have a bassoon on the show, right?
Yeah. I think we have to be the only show that's ever had a bassoon as the house band.
Yeah. We might be breaking new ground.
People don't think along those lines, and yet they will now.
Now they're all going to be like, yeah, we'd like to have a house band, but where are we going to find a bassoon this time of night?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they're going to be thinking.
They're going to say that.
So, Paula, you've been, I know, spending this last month kind of fascinated with hurricane season.
It's hurricane season.
Yeah. And you know, I haven't even picked out my outfits yet for it. It's almost over.
You got to get the right shoes. I'll tell you, obviously the flooding and the suffering and the damage and the lives.
You're anti-death and suffering.
I'm anti-death and suffering and damage and mold.
You have well-established anti-mold cred on this show already. We had a mold expert on to talk to you about it.
We have. I still have mold in my ceiling. But the coverage on the news, I have long believed... I don't really trust a newsman who doesn't have the good sense to come in out of the rain.
Right.
You know, the coverage where they stand in the rain.
Yeah.
I was watching during, which one was it?
First one of the season?
Yeah.
That was Florence.
Yeah.
That,
I was watching during.
Decimated the Carolinas.
I was watching during Florence at one point because it was not, it was very bad. But it actually, the hurricane itself, not the after effects, but the hurricane itself was not as bad as they had anticipated.
No, the winds were down to in the range of like 80 to 90 miles an hour, I think, for most of it.
I can't even remember.
It's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. But I think I was watching on MSNBC, and I think it was Ali Belshi, I think is the guy's name, the bald guy with the glasses from MSNBC.
I can picture him.
I'm looking right at you saying
like
the bald guy with the glasses.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to ignore that. That funny looking guy.
Yeah. The bald guy with the glasses.
Yeah,
there's so few like that.
What a creep.
He was in front of the ocean, and he had his, you know, black slicker. He had his hood up, And he was talking and talking. And finally, he confessed that it was not raining anymore. And he took his hood off.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, you can see in their faces the disappointment.
Right.
That it wasn't. Because they already editorially allocated a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And a certain amount of news people and cameras.
And if the storm lets them down.
Right, exactly.
Right.
You can, there's a certain, the 24-hour news coverage has left in general a certain dripping with blood quality,
right,
about the about the on-air reporters.
They're sad when somebody isn't dripping with blood, is what you're saying.
They don't like
suffering.
They're bloodthirsty. They really are.
Right.
They want to, you know,
but
I'm pretty sure.
Let me shoot an idea at you. And it's this. Television is a visual medium. So as much as I kind of like your point of why are they standing out in the storm, I'd be really sad if I turned on the TV and they were like, I'm safe and snug inside this high school gym. There's a storm raging outside, you're not going to see it.
There's such a thing as a window.
Yeah, but there's... as a guy who's worked in television a lot, you know as well as I do.
Open the window. Stick the camera out the window and we'll believe you. You know
open
what?
Open the Let window during you. A hurricane?
Yes. We have...
What are you talking about?
Yeah, well, yeah, get a crosswind. Look, we live in...
Very bad advice, people, if you're listening.
We live in
hurricane
southern
territory
right
now.
No, I'm not talking about generally. I'm talking about if you're recording it.
Right.
So find a
safe indoor location, open a window, and shoot out the window.
That's what I think, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to do a segment on should you be a TV news producer.
No, we live in Southern California,
right,
and we've been in drought, you know, forever.
Yeah.
We've had record-breaking heat waves,
right,
in recent years, and there's never been one weather guy that's gone and stood in the desert,
right,
and said, oh, my God, I can hardly breathe
look
out here.
Look at this sweat.
Yeah. Would you look? Do I look
that's
like I'm
burning?
That's
when you need a bald guy.
Yeah. Am I burning? I feel like I'm burning. Can you come in tight on these sweat stains? Yeah. Could you do that?
Get Ali, what's his name, to go out west.
Yeah.
His head would be shiny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you know, do I seem dehydrated? Do I seem dehydrated?
I'm going to once again play devil's advocate and submit that looking at something that is hot is also not great television, as opposed to a storm blowing things
all
over
the place. It is if they act hot. It's
act
up to
hot?
That's what they're doing.
Asking for actors
a lot
now.
Of times they were acting windblown when they weren't.
Okay.
And so they should
we need mimes
hot
to walk into the wind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it's just a thing.
No,
it's a thing that I feel.
If you feel it, you should say it because it's your podcast, and as we keep saying, nobody's listening.
Exactly.
Okay.
I can say whatever I want.
All right. So let's move on. We're going to be talking about music and its effect on our psyche. In a few minutes, we've got a guest here who we, you know, in the grand tradition of this show, we ignore until we introduce them.
Yeah, yeah. She's sitting right here at the table.
She's sitting right here next to us.
I have a stack of double stuff Oreos so high that I can't see beyond it.
Right, but basically the way we time this show is not with a timer, but you like eat your way down that stack of
That's
Oreos.
Exactly.
And when
right.
you can see our guest, we introduce
uh-huh.
them. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
So in any way, we have some of our own music news. Are you blowing up a balloon, Paula? For those of you who haven't listened to the last couple of shows, Paula Poundstone is under the delusion that she does balloon animals.
In honor of our guest, who's here to talk about
music, which we're not getting to yet.
The effect of music on our psyches.
Yeah.
I would like to do yet another
balloon animal.
Balloon animal.
Uh-huh. And what is that?
Balloon
Paula?
Sculpture. Hold on.
All right, let's move on.
All right, so that was
while we're on the subject of music, and you're just...
that was a turtle having gas. How was that?
Very nice, very nice.
That was pretty good, wasn't it?
I'm going to try to talk through your balloon animal stuff, which makes
terrible.
Okay,
wait. No, let me just say one thing.
Audio. Okay, what
All
are
right.
you saying?
No, it doesn't. It's an audio medium. Oh, for Christ!
All right, moving on. All right, so
do you even want to know what that was?
No, I do not. That'll be one of those mysteries that our listeners can write in about.
Yeah.
Speaking of our listeners, we've had these entries pouring in for our Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone theme song contest, for which, admittedly, we have established zero parameters other than send in stuff.
Yeah. No, that's not true.
But there was one other piece of advice,
which is
reference the idea that Paula is a genius that might help you in the
I think that could make
nebula-
it a better song. Don't you?
Well, three of our listeners have taken your cue very recently. Let's hear a couple of them. Mike Jensen did it with this very short and zippy song.
She just may be privy to genius or info that could be life-changing.
He's nailed it.
She may hold the answers to all the unknown, but nobody listens to Paula Poundstone.
Yes.
Wow.
Mike
yeah.
Jensen, very
he
nice.
Really nailed it.
I want
it.
To point out, though, that he didn't actually call you a genius. He said that you may be privy to genius.
Yeah, that was just
And I would
to
point
get
out that I'm your co-host.
Yeah, that was... Oh, right.
So thank
yeah,
you, Mike Jensen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was just to get the right syllables. He meant she's
he meant
a genius.
He meant she's a genius?
Yeah.
Well, Mike, you could feel free to clarify in song if you like. Moving on, Christine Richardson of 14 Jazz Cats, which I guess is some kind of hep musical act. They mentioned both your genius and me in her
oh,
lyrics.
Oh, nice.
So, well, I'm excited
Nobody's
to hear
Nobody's listening to me. Nobody's listening to me. So get your coffee cup, turn the volume up. Paula Poundstone's genius to me. You can get your information, you can get your humorization, lots of little tidbits. Paula's giving Adam Fitz life-changing wisdom for me. Nobody's listening to me. Coffee cup, turn the volume up. Paula Poundstone's genius to me.
Yeah.
Christine
yeah,
Richardson. I
fantastic.
Like that one. I like that you're giving me fits.
Yeah, I like yeah. that too.
Yeah.
I like the idea.
Feels
of
a little bit like there's that the Paula and Adam sitcom theme.
Yeah.
Should that ever arise.
Yeah. 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 Should it ever arise?
We're living it. And then finally we have Howard Starrett. He sent in an a cappella entry. But he seems to know your oeuvre.
My what?
Your oeuvre.
Hey, Paula, my name is Howard. I love you. I love your show. And I thought I'd take a crack at writing a theme song for you. I wanted to do something kind of in the vein of like the Patty Duke show or the Nanny. And so here it is. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone, and that's a shame because she's a genius, you know. You ought to listen to Paula Poundstone and grab some good advice to go. She'll tell you all about the troubles with a flat screen device, scrambling your children's brains. She covers pest control, your grammar, and political strife. That shit will drive you insane, ba-boom, boom, boom. Nobody listens to Paula Poundstone, but that's okay, she's got her foot in the door. So why not listen to Paula Poundstone, she's awesome and she sleeps on the floor. Sipping kitty litter like a champ is part of her game. She'll refuse to let it pile up and reek. She improvises riffs about the slightly inane, brightening the whole freaking week. Ba-bum, bum, bum. Nobody listens Whoa. To Paula so... Poundstone, and that's a shame because she's a genius, you know. You ought to listen to Paula Poundstone, and Adam Felber's on every show. So grab some good advice and let's go. Bump, bump, bump. It's good. Good advice she wants you to know.
Oh my God.
She plays ping pong.
Wow. I, at this moment, feel as insulted as the professor and Marianne must have felt in seasons 1 and 2 of Gilligan's Island, where when instead of being named, it was and the rest were those two. It's just two other characters, and they weren't named.
And the rest? It was Adam Felber's on every show. What a fine tribute.
I don't know. After what sounded like 15 minutes of laudatory and biographical information about Paula Poundstone,
you know,
there's
Adam,
a Adam's There Too thing happening.
You know, the thing is, my life is rich with detail, whereas you're on every show.
Okay, that hurts a little bit, but yeah, no, it was a great entry. And,
oh,
and
my
I
gosh,
encourage
it was great.
Everybody to keep submitting these theme songs, because we promise you, we are like this close to deciding what this contest is.
Yeah.
Beyond no, it is
are,
our
these
theme.
Are, these are some acclaimed submissions.
Yeah, they are
at the very
and getting
least.
Better and better.
Yeah.
But you know
I recognize you from the last show.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're on every show.
I'm on every show.
Boy,
Paula.
He nailed it. Adam Felber's on every show.
I feel like he might have left
that.
Out some details about my life.
No,
but okay.
I don't think so.
No. Oh, okay. Well,
I sleep on the floor.
Agree to. Yeah, that's
play ping pong.
Fascinating that you play ping pong. I've played a few rounds of ping pong myself too. Anyway, if listening to the theme songs makes us feel happy, let's try to figure out why. Because Paula, you've noticed something that happens when you sing with other people.
Yeah, you know, it's just a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember if it was you and me singing together or somebody right. else. I remember, you know, you're on every show, so it might have been you.
It could have been me.
But there was just one other voice. Right. I mean, I sing to myself sometimes, but that doesn't do that much for me. But I was with one other voice, and we were combined, right. and I got like a really noticeable lift from it.
And I completely relate to that, because as I've told you, I've played in bands a lot in my time. I play the piano, and right now I have a backyard dad band. I think we're currently calling ourselves the Grateful Dads. Mm-hmm. Which is funny. I'm trying to argue with the band that a funnier name would be Dadfinger, which they think is disgusting. And I'm like, no, it's like Badfinger. But all right. Yeah. But I'm the comedy writer in the band, so that's why. Anyway, there's something about making music with other people. And so let's find
out. There's got to be a reason.
Well, now that you've eaten down that stack of double stuff Oreos,
all right,
we can now find out about how music affects our brain. Dr. Asal Habibi is an assistant professor of psychology at the University of Southern California, and she studied how music affects the development of the brain in early childhood. Please welcome Dr. Asal Habibi. Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on, and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
European. They are so European. And you can get those kinds. You can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because
first sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix sleep quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the number one mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, not right now.
And if you're gonna get it anyway,
use our code.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of Mega, a comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I, y'all can do it, y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here it go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're Jesus, the best. You the be-
okay, never
best
mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Thank you so much
and
for
thank
being
you,
here.
House band Amber Wyman. Dr. Habibi, why does it feel good to sing with other people?
Well, thank you for being here. It's so wonderful. And it was wonderful to listen to those
pieces of music, the entrance music, they were really good.
Weren't they? Yeah. They were uplifting.
Especially the last one.
Collection of them now, yeah.
That's a really good question.
Especially the last one?
Yes. Because now I'll remember it forever, especially because it was merged with music. So I'll have that tune going on.
Yeah. You know, I've got a lot going on in my life, more than just being on this show.
He's on every show.
I'm sure you are.
So why is it that when you sing with someone else, because it was distinctly different than just singing by myself, which also feels good, but not great. And this felt great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's true. Whether you sing with someone or play music with someone, there is a phenomenon called entrainment. That means that you synchronize your rhythm of your body, like your heart rate variability with another person to their rhythm. When children play music together, we all like entrain to one beat. With the structure of music, you just follow the same rhythm and beat. And that has been shown to enhance mood, to help with, like, even in clinical setting with depression, with anxiety. So we see that a lot with choral singing in choirs. When people are singing together, it helps them with a lot of different kind of mood enhancing variables.
But do they know why it does that? Like, what's going on in the brain? Do we know that?
Yeah, so we know a little bit about that. So we know that, for example, that we like social interaction as species, as humans.
Right.
And we like to synchronize with one another. So, for example, if you think about any activity that we do, for example, when we march together, it brings us together. There's a sense of cohesiveness. Uh-huh. I work with children.
I think Kim Jong-un discovered that.
Yeah.
So, not always that. Group belonging.
The effects are not always good.
Yes.
But boy, do they have team spirit.
Yeah. So, for example, I study children, and when we have them play music together or even drum together, we see them do more pro-social activity. They're more willing to share with each other. They're more compassionate towards each other. Wow. If we have a child just drum to a metronome, we did a study about this.
Yeah, metronomes versus drumming together, a real person.
Yeah, and only we see that joint synchronization. So it seems that there is something about synchronizing your heart rate, synchronizing other rhythms of your brain activity with another person. So this action observation network that we have in our brain, we see something in someone and we mimic it, and that actually gives us a sense of understanding them better, to have a sense of empathy towards them.
So if I'm singing with you, then our heart rates sync?
Yes, and to the structure of the music, because we both have to take a breath at the same time. Uh-huh. We have to, like, exhale at the same time. So there is some variability of the heart rate that sync with each other. So there is, like, that's one of the proposition of why we think singing can help enhancement of mood.
Now, are there songs, styles, or rhythms that just work better than others for uplifting your mood? Like, is a shuffle beat better than waltz time? I mean, like, what's...
There are a lot of variables that would explain that. So there is one of the things that we actually look at is that why people listen to sad music and why do people get pleasure from sad music? And not everyone does.
Right.
There are people who like to listen to sad music. And
I hate to take you to a sidebar right away, but is sad music a thing that's like cross-cultural? Is like a minor key song always sad everywhere?
No, minor key song is not always sad everywhere. Dissonance is always dissonance. And it always bothers you because there is actually inside the inner ear, there is some structure called the basilar membrane.
It's called the
basilar membrane.
The basilar membrane?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
if I have another kid, that's what I'm naming him.
Well, you can't do that. My kid's nickname is Baz.
Oh, yeah, but no, I'm saying the whole thing.
This is the basilar membrane.
Basilar membrane, Poundstone, you get in here.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, go on.
And this structure is tonotopically mapped, meaning that each tone, each frequency, has a space on it. When the spaces are too close, when two tones are too close, like a minor second, which is dissonant, it doesn't work very well because these two areas are activated very closely to each other.
And
that's
like
what
scrapes.
It sounds. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It just really sounds horrible when you listen to it.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of like the physiological background. And in every culture, that will be true. The minor key is not always true. If you are born, let's say, in India and always exposed to that music and that system of music, that doesn't necessarily make you sad. And even in
so the keys are cultural, but dissonance is
correct. Yeah.
Yeah. The other day I was trying to explain to Paula, maybe you can back me up, about how octaves are perceived as the same note because of the way they look on an oscilloscope. And at first she looked confused, and then I thought she was kind of going to tear my face off like a chimp might angrily.
No, I was never going to tear your face off.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because you're on every show. I need you.
All right.
not working with some faceless guy, some
right,
nameless.
Yeah, that would be disturbing for you with your
guy in the crowd.
Multivariate life. Now, if you listen to a lot of music educators,
yeah,
they will tell you that music education is important because it opens up your brain to other learning. And I guess our question is that should we take that as something that is true, or that the music department needs more glockenspiels?
No, I think that...
Yeah. You know, years ago, I did a private job for an association of music stores that sell instruments.
Okay.
And they had a calendar that was their calendar that went out to all their members. And one of the most beloved sacred dates on their calendar was the anniversary of the birth of the man who got schools to include in the fourth grade getting their instrument and taking an instrument. Like, because in their world, they bow down to that man because you go to school and it's not like with cooking. It's not like there's pots and pans salespeople where in the fourth grade you choose your pots.
Well, music people feel very, very strongly about that. And I guess the question
important to have music in schools. But the point is, this was a guy that made like every kid. Like, I used to play the flute. Because my sister played the flute,
and so
my parents bought it,
right.
And then I was stuck playing the flute. Do you see what I'm saying? There was a person that got to sell that flute to my parents because of the birth of that man who connected it up with the schools.
That was an interesting detour. Now, Amber.
You're on.
Not Amber,
every
I'm sorry.
Week. I don't, every week you're on.
Asala, or Dr. Habibi.
Asala's fine.
Going back to the question.
Yes.
And now we're learning the reason why I'm on every week. What does music do for the developing brain? Does it really help?
Yes, it does help. We now have very good evidence that it helps children with cognitive skills, meaning language, memory, learning a second language, attention. They also, in our research, we actually have very good evidence that it shows them with tasks and skills that we don't think about, like impulse control.
Right.
So when children learn how to play music, they're better at inhibiting themselves of doing something immediately in favor of something better in the future.
So we test them with impulse control.
Yeah.
See, no, I didn't stick with the flute. Can you tell?
Yeah, that really shows.
Yeah.
That really shows.
I should have stuck with the flute. I didn't.
You wouldn't need me if you'd stuck with the flute.
Honestly, I think of you as my little piccolo. Wow, that's really interesting. So it helps with impulse control.
Yeah, impulse control. And also we have evidence that it actually changes their brain. We see more connectivity between the right and left side of the brain of children who have had music training compared to the ones who don't have music training.
And what is the advantage of having more connectivity?
So the two sides of the brain communicate with each other a lot. So when you have a highway
email.
Yeah. allows more connection and allows more communication. You can integrate information better. You can hold multiple ideas in your head. It probably helps with creativity.
So it makes you more creative and flexible thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when do you think kids should start learning an instrument so that they can forge those pathways between their right and left brains and whatnot?
The research shows between ages 5 to 7 is the most important. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't expose a child to music before age 5.
Oh, I'm not letting my kids hear anything until they're 9.
Yeah.
It's just dangerous
out
there.
Yeah. Why does a song get stuck in your head?
That's a really good question.
Thank you. If you would just speak directly
you don't even have to answer it.
Into
just
the microphone while you say that, and we could record. That's a really good question. Thank you.
Ingenious question.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah. There's work around that's been done on this a lot. So we know that music tends to get encoded, like memories of music tend to get encoded with more emotions because you experience more emotions when you listen to music. A lot of like affective system and emotion systems of the brain are active. Uh-huh. So it seems that that has something to do with the remembrance of that song.
A detective came and knocked on the door and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts. and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
And you kind of connect with it. So the encoding of it is stronger and the retrieval of it would be stronger, too. It's kind of a phenomenon called the earworm. So you kind of keep listening to this song over and over and it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
I don't know of really any research that shows how to get rid of it.
Right, because that's what I would like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was sitting around, I was working on this TV show recently. And I was sitting around the table just the other day and somebody burst out with, and I'm sorry to do this to all of you. She's just sitting there and she goes, "We built this city," which is that Starship song, "We
sure.
built the city on rock and roll." And
yeah.
I just despise that song. And I think it's going to take me another year and a half before I get that out of my head.
When my kids were in like preschool, they used to, there was a song that the teacher used. It was, the kids would behave like a particular animal physically. And then they would sing, "Animal Action is so much fun." And that sticks in your head. And I don't remember any other words of it, and I never did. But they would, you know, so I would sing it to them every so often because I knew that if I sang it once, it would rattle around up there like a bullet in a tank for a really long time. It was sort of a cruel thing that I would do to my children. Animal Election.
So, yeah, that's
so
that's
much
a
fun.
Form of torture, really.
Yeah, it was kind of a, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But you don't have an answer for that. There's
but
no
I don't why, have an answer of getting rid of it.
There
I mean,
no
we
current.
Just know that when you listen to music, multiple systems of the brain are active. It's like uh-huh. you activate the memory system, the emotion system, the yeah. the motor sensory systems of the brain. So this kind of like multiple activation helps with encoding a song a lot
oh,
more stronger than
so
just hearing a sentence.
Particular songs
it.
Sort of fire up the memory Roomba and
right.
That's going around up there. Like,
Roomba.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
Not,
and
not
next
Roomba,
thing you know,
Roomba.
Not Roomba, Roomba.
Okay.
And next thing you know, you can't get rid of it. You got to
right.
take it apart. And
it just keeps banging on the side of
you. Yeah, you got to take it apart and clean out the filter.
Sometimes it's helpful to remember the memories with the music. So like, for example, in patients with dementia, you can expose them to the music that they have a connection with from like 20, 30 years ago, and it actually does help bring autobiographical memory back. That
oh,
typically...
now we want to get to dementia in a minute, but I want to say, like, sometimes yeah. you don't want them because, like, honest to God, my only memory of "We Built This City," they're all very strong memories, but they're all the same memory, which is like trying not to hear that anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't associate it with a time in your life when you were working
no,
somewhere?
I associate it with a time in my life, which is every time I've ever heard that song, to kind of wanting it to go away.
Huh.
Yeah. But let's get to dementia, because this is an interesting topic to both me and Paula, because we've both volunteered in. Would you stop that?
We built this city on rock and roll.
Built this city. Oh, yeah. God, I hate you.
Animal Election is so much fun.
I'm going to knock that out. So Paula and I have both volunteered or worked with Alzheimer's patients. So
yeah.
tell us about how dementia and music work together.
Yeah, so again,
or one helps the other.
Yeah, no, it's we have now research showing that you could use music because, again, when you listen to music and you have an experience of a life experience, that experience and memory gets encoded with a lot more richer, with a lot more kind of like details into it because
right.
you activate the affective system of the brain. So if you play the music of during the time that you really, for example, like you were in the 20s and you really mm-hmm. were engaged with music, when somebody is suffering from dementia, that music tends to bring back a lot of memories that the person with dementia does not have access to. Mm-hmm. And the hypothesis is that because we have kind of like an extra help here, it's not that you just have to access the memory directly. You have access to a memory that is being encoded with a lot of emotions and affect.
Oh.
And music kind of helps that mediation.
So it literally takes them back mentally to a place where they were before.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's really
interesting. And then it helps them remember those events. It helps them to, it enhances mood. It helps a lot with depression associated with Alzheimer's and dementia. So this music therapy for dementia seems to be a very effective way without, in conjunction with other therapies.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting.
Yeah. It's like in Ratatouille when the food reviewer eats the ratatouille
and
then he's brought back to his boyhood.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Very much right. Like that.
Yeah, I guess what we're saying is music does that even better than
Ratatouille.
Than Ratatouille.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I will point out that beloved Pixar film is not necessarily scientifically valid.
It's a Pixar film.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Asal Habibi, for tuning up
our
brains.
You didn't believe in Up?
I believe in the movie Up. I don't believe that, for instance, you can relocate your home with balloons. I don't even believe that you can make balloon animals. Here we go again. Dr. Habibi, thank you so much. And Paula, when you're done inflating that balloon, can you give our listeners some advice about music and their brains?
Hey, Amber, could you give us a little house band bassoon music behind my summary of what I learned about the brain and music? The basilar membrane is part of the inner ear that has spaces between it for different frequencies. Notes sound dissonant when two are too close together and can't be distinguished. The basilar membrane is also my youngest son's new name. We built this city. We built this city. When you make music with someone else, you experience a brain phenomenon called entrainment. It can also happen with marching. So a marching band must be all but fused together after Stars and Stripes Forever. We built this city. Music fires up emotion systems in the brain, which is why songs trip memories so easily. On rock and roll. So someday, I'm going to remember this night.
Okay. Wow. Woo-hoo. Dr. Asal Habibi is Assistant Professor of Psychology at the University of Southern California. Thanks so much for being on our show. The cat of the week is Hobbs from West Salem, Ohio.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric.
Urgh.
They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paula, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we're back.
So happy to be back.
How would you describe your, I'm going to change the subject a little bit. How would you describe your driving skills?
My driving skills?
Yes.
I suck at driving.
You're not particularly good.
People honk and yell at me all the time. The truth is, I arrive at the Ray Horseman Studios in scenic Miranda.
Miranda Street. Which we haven't even talked about tonight, by the way.
No.
This is not a great neighborhood to drive in or indeed breathe in.
No, but I come an hour early so that you guys can't see me parallel park.
Really?
Yeah, I'm that bad at it. Yeah, it's ugly. And I think a lot of times, you know, I'm pretty sure I've seen drug deals going down while I'm here.
Yeah.
And people are sort of try to, you know, get off the street quickly because they do their thing and then they move away.
Right.
But a lot of times they stop and stare for a few minutes when they see. They even put their heads out the window sometimes from their homes when they see me parking.
Well, you could conceivably
They're like, she's here again.
Right. You could conceivably be a cop. Who's just
bad
at
parking. No one thinks I'm a cop.
Okay. Nobody thinks you're a cop?
No.
I've noticed this about you, is you always keep on your bumper, when you drive, a student driver sticker?
I do.
Yeah,
I have a magnet? I have a student driver sticker on the back of my car, just to keep people away from me.
Really? That's really why you do it?
Yep, it is. Because I'm not a good driver, and I know that. It doesn't improve my driving at all to have you guys honk and yell. I already know I'm an asshole. In fact, you don't know the half of it, is what I always say.
Right.
So I wanted to talk to, to somebody who could answer my driving skill questions.
Yeah, you definitely have some issues around driving, so let's see if an expert can help you resolve some of those questions.
This expert that I've totally ignored up until this moment.
You've just about eaten a pile of double stuffs down.
That's right.
To reveal Josh Mendoza, a driving instructor at the Melrose Driving School. He seems to have successfully driven himself here into our very friendly neighborhood. Please welcome Josh Mendoza.
Hey, Josh.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here. Well,
thanks for having me. This is pretty exciting.
Okay. Oh, you got to aim higher, Josh. All right. So
the one question that launched us off on this a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about topics for the show, is, Josh, what do you do at a four-way stop? Because Paula is convinced that there is no answer to this question. She thinks this is a chicken and egg thing.
No, I know the answer in the book. I could answer it on a written test. What I can't do is apply that practically because it's a ridiculously written rule. It's whoever gets there first or the person on the right has a right of way. We all are on the right. It's a square.
Yeah, see, the thing is, it's that rule really only applies if, let's say, two or three cars show up at the same time. Right. So if like, let's say if two or three cars show up at the same time, then whoever's like most to the right, that's like right on the street, that's the person that goes first. Then, you know, it's like the hands of a clock. Then it's like the person that's next right and then the last person that's left.
But what if all four show up at the same time?
See, that's tricky. So see, in that situation, then it's whoever has like the gumption, the gall, to just kind of, you know, ease up a little and say, hey, I'm the person. Okay, I'll go.
It's a little fluid.
It's a little
Wild West. It's
sort of. Yeah,
so the third
right.
thing.
And what if two people pull up opposite each other? Then they're both equally on each other's rights.
Right. See, that's the thing is that it doesn't really matter. If it depends on, like, let's say one person's going straight or one person's turning left or right, then it just depends on what happens.
So basically, the law as it's written, the rule as it's written, doesn't really apply most of the time.
No. Yeah. No, not really.
Yeah. It always seems tricky to me.
How often do you pull up to a stop sign exactly when somebody else does?
But the other thing is I don't know. And part of the reason I don't know is because I'm very busy in my car.
So you're not even looking.
I don't really know if anyone pulled up at the same time as me or not, you know.
Josh, is that the mark of a good driver?
No, definitely not a good mark for a driver.
I think I see what you're saying. Here's the thing, though. I have music in my car. I like to listen to music in my car.
Uh-huh.
And
a lot of people do.
I like to get I have a soda.
Yeah.
And
we found out the other day that you occasionally will keep an open container of oatmeal.
Yeah, I do. Right. Yeah.
Josh, how's that? How's that for smarts?
That's not great science, to be honest. Yeah. So it's a lot of red flags.
Yeah. Now, see, I would stop at a red flag.
Okay. Let's get to some.
You know, when I go at a four-way stop, I go when the guy behind me seems pissed. That's how I've done it for years.
Exactly not when you're supposed to.
I know.
It's a bad reason.
I wait until there's a guy behind me and he kind of leans on his horn. I'm like, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to wait a really long time. for someone to pull up behind you.
Oh, so you will actually wait until somebody gets mad at you?
Absolutely. I just want it to not be my fault when it happens. I like to delegate, I guess. That's
Josh, I'm not even going to ask you if that's a good idea.
Of course, it's a good idea.
Okay, so how does somebody nail parallel parking every time? Let's move on to specifics.
Yeah. See, the thing is that you kind of have to be really familiar with the length of your car. You have to be, you know, really like in tune with your car to know if like you see a spot that's on the street and realize, okay, wait, you know, I can totally fit my car in. So you really have to know, A, the length of your car, B, when you pull up next to a car,
how do you do that? Do you like stretch out beside your car?
No,
how do you get to? You like to lay across the roof? You just lay across. You get in tune with the length of your car.
It's just practice. Practice over and over again, getting a feel for your car, like your balance, your spacing, and then you'll be able to determine throughout time. Like, okay, you know what? That spot that I see there on the street, sure, I can go ahead and just pull up next to a car and then back into
it. So you pull up next to a car. I got that part.
Yeah.
How far up do you pull? Do you put your grill parallel to his grill?
No. See, that's too far.
Okay.
See, once you start backing up, then you might end up smashing the car that you just pulled up.
You put your rearview mirror parallel alongside his rearview mirror? That's how I was taught.
Yeah. What I usually tell students is actually pull up where your rearview mirror lines up with the window of the driver.
Oh, so the window of the driver and the my rearview mirror.
Oh. Right.
So that's good, because I'm often a little too far forward with my mirror-to-mirror thing.
I know.
You drive a bike.
I also drive a car.
You ride a bike. That's
Have you ever
ridiculous.
Tried to park a bike, parallel park a bike?
Yeah, you don't parallel park a bike.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting detail about me beyond I'm on the show.
Yeah, you're on the show. Yeah. You're on the show every week, and also you parallel park your bike. Okay, sorry to interrupt, Josh.
No,
happened? I became impulsive because I haven't played an instrument recently.
Well, maybe you should have thought of that when you were younger.
Yeah.
Now, Josh, what is the most common driving mistake that drives you nuts? Like, everybody makes this mistake, and you were like, if you could talk to the people of America, because this
Wait
is sure your chance.
Didn't finish the parallel parking. So you pull up with your, you got a little impulsive there, buddy.
I don't know why, because I played the piano since I was six.
Yeah, I have a harmonica here for you in my pocket. Why don't you, all right, so you pull up, just you could play an instrument, and that would help with your impulsivity. All right, so you pull up with your rear view mirror, no, your side view mirror.
Your rearview mirror alongside the driver's side window of the car that you're pulling up against.
The side view mirror or the rear view mirror?
Their side window, like the driver's side window.
Yeah.
Right.
So you pull up mirror?
Your right rearview mirror.
My right rearview. No, you mean the right side view mirror.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I don't have a right rearview mirror.
Right,
just,
you're right.
Just the one rearview mirror.
Right.
Okay. So your side view mirror, I got it now. This is not confusing at all.
It
so you
really
got
isn't.
Your side view mirror pulled up to the driver's window.
But not touching it.
But not touching it. No. But you tap and try to get him to roll it down.
No. You don't need to get that close.
You probably wonder why I pulled my side view mirror up to your car, don't you?
I'm barking behind you.
That's right.
That's right.
I'm parallel parking. Watch this, buddy.
And then what does she do?
And then after that, you just, once you put the car into reverse, move the steering wheel first all the way to the right. So then once you start backing up, the car will automatically start heading into the space.
Yeah, okay, that I got. But see, what I never do right is when you begin to reverse the wheel the other way.
Right.
I always get that wrong. And then what happens is I'm parked about maybe a foot and a half from the curb, not nearly tucked in enough.
It sounds like you're cutting the wheel too early.
And I think I might be cutting the wheel too early. Something tells me I'm cutting the wheel too early.
Something. Or someone.
Or someone. So then, I'm sticking out like that.
Right.
And then I can't. And then all I can do is do the exact same thing I just did over and over again. I cannot get out of the space and I cannot get into the space.
Right.
Do you see the pain in my face, Josh? Do you understand the kind of difficulty this is creating?
I totally understand.
So you cut the wheel and you go all the way back until your tires hit the curb?
No. See, that's way too late. See the thing?
Oh, see, so I'm cutting it too late.
Are your tires hitting the curb? You didn't get to that part.
Oh, yeah, my tires hit the curb.
Okay, because I thought you were too far away from the curb.
Eventually.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So you don't hit the curb.
No. Once you start backing up, it's once you see that the back of your car is starting to head towards where the curb is, then that's your cue to start bringing the wheel back.
Wait,
to the left.
When is your cue?
Your cue is when you look at your right side mirror, when you see that the back of your car is heading towards the curb, not actually hitting it, but when it's heading towards the curb, that's